This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Saudi Arabia said today it had made a huge and grave mistake in the killing of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir appeared on Fox News.
The individuals who did this outside the scope of their authority. There obviously was a tremendous mistake made, and what compounded the mistake was the attempt to try to cover up. That is unacceptable in any government. These things unfortunately happen. We want to make sure that those who are responsible are punished, and we want to make sure that we have procedures in place that prevent it from happening again.
The foreign minister also expressed his condolences to Khashoggi's family, but had no new information on how the 59-year-old journalist was killed or what happened to his body. Voting continued on Sunday in Afghanistan's first parliamentary election since 2010. Saturday saw a turnout of 3.3 million, but as if on schedule, there was violence as well. 15 people were killed, another 60 wounded, when a suicide bomber struck outside a polling station in Kabul. 15 people died in a roadside bomb explosion in the eastern province of Nangarhar as well. King Abdullah of Jordan says he's decided not to renew parts of his nation's landmark treaty with Israel. The two annexes allowed Israel to lease two small areas of farming land from the Jordanians for 25 years. The deadline for renewal is late this week. The king gave no reason for his decision, but he's been under domestic pressure to end the lease and return the land to full Jordanian control. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged Jordan's right to reclaim the land, but said he had expected to enter negotiations over a lease renewal. He also stressed that his country's accord with Amman as a whole is an important thing. A question in Britain today: what, if anything, will it mean that hundreds of thousands of protesters marched through central London on Saturday, demanding a new election on Britain's departure from the European Union? British Prime Minister Theresa May has ruled out an additional public vote. This is VOA News. There have been new killings in the Ebola-stricken area of Congo. One rebel force is being blamed for 13 civilian deaths and the abduction of a dozen children. Two Congolese army medical officers were killed by another armed group. The violence once again threatens efforts to contain the spread of the disease in Congo's northeast. The country's health minister called it a dark day for everyone fighting the deadly virus. Sri Lanka's military says it will recall its commander leading a UN force in Mali after the world body asked him to be repatriated over his human rights accord. A spokesman said the army will comply with the UN request, but it does not believe the officer is guilty of anything. Large numbers of Central American migrants who had been stopped by Mexican police on a bridge at the Guatemala border have crossed into Mexico by swimming across the river below and are once again said to be on the march north. The caravan, mainly from Honduras, is headed to the U.S.-Mexico border, though President Trump is threatening to shut it down on the U.S. side. Meanwhile, the AP's Julie Walker reports on those migrants trying to enter Mexico legally.
Whenever a small gate opens to receive the Honduran migrants at this processing center on the Mexico-Guatemala border, there's a desperate crush of bodies that push forward in the heat. Some have even fainted. Mexico is giving out a small number of visitor visas, which in theory could allow some migrants to get to the U.S. border, something President Trump says he's ready to guard against.
I will seal off the border before they come into this country, and I'll bring out our military, not our reserves. I'll bring out our military.
Some migrants say they're fleeing gang violence. Others say they're in search of work. I'm Julie Walker.
The UN Refugee Agency says any nation has a sovereign right to control its borders, but that there is also a need to grant international protection to those who are fleeing from persecution in their home countries, a principal claim of those who march in migrant caravans from Central America. The U.S. Justice Department official who oversees the Robert Mueller investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election will answer questions from lawmakers this week. They'll have plenty. Here is AP's Mike Gracia.
The chairman and two leading Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee will question Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. The House Judiciary Committee says the transcribed interview will take place on October 24th. It will focus on a New York Times report that Rosenstein discussed secretly recording President Donald Trump last year. The interview will come 13 days before the midterm elections. Mike Gracia, Washington.
And lottery players in the United States are holding on to their dreams of an astounding payoff in next Tuesday's Mega Millions drawing. It's expected to be worth $1.6 billion. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. It's Sunday, October 21st. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clote has the day off.
Not difficult for anybody to escape from Nigeria and find safe haven, if not in West Africa, in the Caribbean, and perhaps even in Europe and America.
Nigerian government authorities bar citizens who are facing corruption charges from traveling.
We have countries like America, we have countries like Britain, and we have our fellow Malawians who have done a great job to this country. Why not respecting them? We are respecting someone who just did something little to the country.
Activists in Malawi protest construction of a statue of India's independence leader Mahatma Gandhi.
For as long as that group of men in their 30s, serve as a bridging population between older women and younger women, you can't solve the HIV problem.
And scientists in South Africa find that sexual relationships between women as young as 15 and older men are driving the country's HIV crisis. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Five people were killed in northern Nigeria last week after clashes between young Christians and Muslims. The fight on Thursday began after a dispute between Muslim and Christian youth at a market in north central Kaduna State, that's according to state media. In a statement Saturday, a spokesman for President Muhammadu Buhari said the president, in his words, had condemned the latest communal violence in Kusawani Mbagani in Kaduna State, which claimed 55 lives. Kaduna State Police Commissioner Ahmed Abdulrahman said on Friday that 22 people had been arrested in connection with the violence. Nigeria is mostly split along religious lines, with Muslims in the north and Christians in the south. In his statement, Buhari said Nigerians too frequently resort to violence over misunderstandings. Meanwhile, the Nigerian government has begun enforcing an executive order that allows authorities to bar citizens who are facing corruption charges from traveling. The government said in a statement that it has banned no fewer than 50 persons from traveling abroad over corruption cases. The government, however, did not reveal the identities of the affected persons. The opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, PDP, says it rejected the travel restrictions on 50 high-profile Nigerians, describing the restriction as a draconian step targeted at members of the opposition parties, business community, religious leaders, former political leaders, and traditional rulers perceived to be averse to President Buhari's re-election bid. Mr. Onweza Okocha is a senior advocate of Nigeria and a former president of the Nigerian Bar Association. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonyi about the implications of the travel restrictions.
Well, let me say that I'm shocked by it, because from what we have heard and read from the news media, we do not even know who those 50 Nigerians are. Some lists came out in the social media, and the federal government has denied that list was not released by them. But more importantly, we have been told that the travel restrictions were in furtherance of the executive order number 6 issued by the president. And you know, sometime last week, a court in Abuja ruled that the president has power to issue executive orders. That matter, as you may also have read and heard, has gone to the Court of Appeal, because many, including myself, most respectfully disagree with that decision. Executive orders should not be used to exercise what should ordinarily be judicial function. The restriction of any Nigerian's movement is an infringement of that Nigerian's fundamental right of liberty and freedom of movement.
The opposition party says the ban is targeted at those perceived to be opposed to President Buhari's re-election. Do you agree?
Well, I cannot agree with a statement that has no material particulars. As I said earlier, we do not know who the 50 Nigerians are. But then, some of the opposition parties have made a point that what is the necessity of restricting the movement of certain Nigerians in the present democratic dispensation we have, where, as I've said earlier, every Nigerian is guaranteed a fundamental right of freedom of movement, fundamental right of liberty. And if you see what has gone on in the recent past, who are being hounded by the present administration using the multiplicity of law enforcement agencies that we have, the police, the Directorate of State Security Services, otherwise known as DSS, the EFCC, the ICPC, who are they hounding? All are opposition politicians. And we know some of them who are in the APC, who have been indicted, in quotes, indicted because they have been found culpable in corrupt activities. And I can readily remember the foreshore tower flat where several millions of dollars were recovered and how they removed from office the then director general of the Directorate of National Intelligence. As recently as 1 month ago, one of them was removed, who was the director general of the Directorate of State Security Services, one Maman Daura, for going to seal up the National Assembly without authorization, in fact, in a most bizarre and unlawful manner. And this is the same man who, as head of the DSS, had gone and raided the houses of certain judges in small hours of the morning, and up till today, none of those judges has been convicted of any criminal offense. So it may not be untrue, may not be unlikely that these restriction orders that we are now hearing will now be issued against 50 Nigerians may be targeted at opposition politicians.
Do you also think that travel restriction is the best option to stop corrupt officials from fleeing the country?
You know, let's be honest. Any serious corrupt individual who wants to flee the country has every liberty and opportunity to do so. We have the most porous borders, even under military regime. You remember the people who were called Nadeko activists? They found a route that they called the Nadeko route, and most of them, including some of them who are now active in today's politics, were abroad. The world has moved miles and miles ahead of all of us. And all you need to allege is that you are a fugitive from persecution. You are a fugitive from political domination. You can even allege that you have been denied your fundamental right of self-determination. There are people now known as people without any nationalities because the international communities recognize that some people are oppressed and, you know, marginalized to the extent that their own states, their own countries are no longer safe havens for them. And every human being must find refuge in this world. So it is not difficult for anybody to escape from Nigeria and find safe haven, if not in West Africa, in the Caribbean, and perhaps even in Europe and America.
That was Onwezu Okocha, who is a senior advocate of Nigeria and a former president of the Nigeria Bar Association. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonyi. The UN Refugee Agency indicates Washington is on shaky legal ground in barring Central American asylum seekers from entering the U.S. The UNHCR reports people fleeing persecution and violence have a right to international protection. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency does not question the sovereign right of any nation to control its borders, but it does say international law governs the way countries must behave toward refugees and asylum seekers. The UNHCR says it recognizes the arrival of thousands of Honduran migrants in the caravan at the U.S. borders will be overwhelming. But spokesman Charlie Yaxley says closing the border to the caravan is not a solution and will likely cause harm to those who have a legitimate fear for their lives.
We'd wish to reiterate and underline that any individuals within that group that are fleeing persecution and violence, they need to be given access to territory and they need to be allowed to exercise their fundamental human right to seek asylum and have access to refugee status determination procedures.
Yaxley says this principle is not only set out in international law, but is also part of the national legislation of all countries concerned. He says it is important for governments to follow the law. He tells VOA the U.S. has not always stuck to the letter of refugee law.
I think there's been well documented some of the issues around the separation of children in the US. We've repeatedly called for families not to be separated and for detention not to be used.
Yaxley says the UNHCR continues to work with the United States on ensuring their operations are in line with their obligations under international law. In the meantime, the Geneva-based International Red Cross Federation reports Red Cross volunteers across Central America are accompanying the migrants along their journey. It says they are providing first aid and water and working to reunite families who have become separated along the way. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Malawi, activists are protesting construction of a statue of India's independence leader Mahatma Gandhi. The statue in the commercial capital Blantyre is being erected as part of a deal for India to construct a $10 million convention center. A group of protesters says the statue is an insult to Malawians and Africa because of racial slurs Gandhi made as a young man. Lameka Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
An online campaign in Malawi has collected nearly 4,000 signatures against erecting a statue of India's independence leader, Mahatma Gandhi. Mpambira Obrega Mbewa, an organizer of the Gandhi Must Fall campaign, says Malawians should not honor Gandhi because of racial slurs.
This primarily also draws back to the time that he was in South Africa, when he was an activist, where he based his fight for the rights of Indians based on the discrimination of black people. He alluded to the fact that Indians are racially superior to black people.
Gandhi's racial slurs were documented in letters the Indian leader wrote as a young man while living in South Africa in the late 1800s. In the letters, Gandhi referred to Africans, savages, and kafirs, an insulting term for black Africans when comparing them with the Indian population. Gandhi's relatives and supporters note that the comments were common parents at the time and that he made no similar slurs in later life. Malawi's government spokesperson Nicholas Dawusi says he does not believe that Gandhi was a racist.
There is no issue here. This is just coming a teacup. It's just been perpetrated by bad people. But I think it is just being thrown out of proportion. And I think we do not need to have such kind of behavior. But in government will proceed.
Malawi's Minister of Foreign Affairs says the Gandhi's statue aims to recognize his role in the struggle against colonialism. Gandhi's non-violent fight against British rule in India inspired numerous independence and civil rights movements and leaders across the globe, from Martin Luther King in the United States to Nelson Mandela's struggle against South African apartheid. Rafiki Hajjad is the executive director of the Blantyre think tank, Institute for Policy Interaction. He argues the Malawi government should admit Gandhi had a racist view in his 20s, but abandoned them in his 40s in the struggle for civil rights.
And I think one has to shed a lot of light on the subject before proceeding, because otherwise the philosophy of non-violent resistance that Mahatma Gandhi embodied will be lost.
Construction of Malawi's Gandhi Monument began in August on a street already named after the Indian leader. Along with the statue, the Indian government is building the Mahatma Gandhi Convention Center in Blantyre, a win for Malawi's economy. On the streets, Malawians have divided views on the Gandhi monument. Rachel Misoya sells second-hand clothes.
We have countries like America, we have countries like Britain, and we have our fellow Malawians who have done a great job to this country. Why not respecting them? We are respecting someone who just did something little to the country.
Gray Massa is a resident of Chimwankunda Township.
Whether people think Mahatma Gandhi was a racist or not is just an opinion that each one can have. People can choose to erect statues anywhere, in as far as it is in accordance with the law of that land.
It is not the first time an African monument to Gandhi had been made with protest because of his early views on race. There were a similar uproar in 2003 against a Gandhi statue in Johannesburg. In Ghana, a statue of Gandhi in 2016 was relocated off a university campus after professors petitioned against the monument. They said African heroes should be honored first. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Scientists in South Africa have found that sexual relationships between women as young as 15 and older men are driving the country's HIV crisis. South Africa has the biggest HIV epidemic in the world, with an estimated 7 million people living with the disease. The medical study focused on a part of KwaZulu-Natal province, where one in four people is infected with HIV, one of the highest rates in the world. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports on why the young women are risking their lives despite knowing the dangers of unprotected sex.
Okay, so how do you think you're going to disclose your status to your partner?
A nurse prepares to weigh a patient in a room in a hospital in Durban. The patient is a slender 20-year-old woman wearing a scarlet top, her blue jeans fashionably tattered, her hair a mass of braids. Her fake diamond earrings sparkle under fluorescent tubes of white light. Inside the hospital's waiting area, Amehlo, as she wants to be called, smiles shyly as she explains that she currently has two boyfriends. One's her own age, the other's 8 years older than her.
Yeah.
We met in town for the first time, and he said he loves me and he can do anything for me. He hooted in the car, and I went to him.
Amehlo is from Vulindlela, a rural settlement about 130 miles north of Durban. She says before she began a relationship with her older partner, life was very hard for her, her mother, and her two sisters. All are unemployed, and they'd often be hungry. But, says Amehlo, the bad days ended when she met her new boyfriend, who's a married professional.
Buy for me a new cell phone and clothes.
He bought me a cell phone, he buys me clothes, and sometimes anything that I want, I can ask him and he does it for me. He buys groceries, even for myself and for the whole family. Even if I'm going away, he gives money for the transport.
In South Africa, such older men are called blessers because they bless their young girlfriends with money and other material goods. But there's something else Amehlo wants from her older partner, something that he refuses to give her, safe sex.
He says because he does everything for me, I cannot tell him to use condoms. Having sex without a condom makes me feel sad because I do not know his status. I do not want to tell the older one to use condoms because I'm afraid that he may stop doing all the nice things that he's doing for me.
She says her boyfriend's having sex with other women, and she's terrified that soon he'll infect her with HIV.
This building cost almost R1 billion to build.
Professor Salim Karim is the director of the Center for the AIDS Program of Research in South Africa, or CAPRISA, in Durban. It's one of the most advanced HIV research facilities in the world. Karim says blessers have become culturally acceptable across South Africa.
If a 35-year-old knocked on my door to ask for a date with my teenage daughter,
I'd kick his backside and send him packing. That person would not be welcomed in my house. It would not be welcomed in my community. That person is doing something that we would not accept. It's a community norm. We would not accept that. I have to understand in the communities that I work in that they don't have that norm. And in fact, the norm is the opposite, that it's actually perfectly fine. They accept it. It's become now part and parcel of what they live with.
This is Vulindlela, where Amehlo lives, and one of the communities that Karim's referring to. Most people here are poor. They live in mud huts or basic homes. Children dawdle along stony dirt roads. A minibus taxi pumps music on a distant hillside. Caprese scientists have found that more than 6 out of every 10 women older than 30 have HIV in Vulindlela. Gethwana Mahlase has worked as an HIV counselor here for almost 3 decades. She says poverty is the main reason for young women or girls having older boyfriends.
Sanitary pads are competing with a loaf of bread. The loaf of bread is going to be enjoyed by the whole family. Now this sanitary pad is for this one girl or 2 girls in the family. So which one must they go for? If you get somebody who can buy you sanitary pads, a bag of millimil, sugar, flour, then definitely you will not be prepared to starve. The blesser becomes the blesser for the family.
Karim says it's a myth that blessers are mostly middle-aged or old men. Caprice's research has shown that blessers are usually about 9 years older than their younger girlfriends. Mahlase agrees.
It turns out that they can be as young as 25, also as young as 20, because a 20-year-old would have a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old girl and a 13-year-old girl.
Mahlase says the older men are typically working class, having jobs in factories, for example. They don't earn much, so they don't give their younger partners lots of money.
You get somebody who's going to buy you the real basic necessities, food. It could be money to carry at school. It could be as little as 5 rands.
But, says Mahlase, the blessers are rich in danger. Caprice's investigation in Vulindlela shows women of about 30 are infecting men of about 30 with HIV. This is the very age group of men most likely to be blessers.
That's how they become the bridging population, transmitting HIV from older women to younger women. And they are a very effective bridge because they don't know they have HIV. They recently acquired HIV and have a very high viral load. So they're very efficient transmitters of HIV. For as long as that group of men, men in their 30s, serve as a bridging population between older women and younger women, you can't solve the HIV problem.
Medical machinery hums inside Professor Tulio D'Oliveira's laboratory. He's one of the leaders of the study that tracked the spread of HIV in Vulindlela using DNA sequencing. D'Oliveira says another misconception is that young women like Amehlo, who have relationships with older men, are in general sexually promiscuous.
We are talking about women with average of sexual partners of 3 in their life, but we are in a community with such a high level of HIV prevalence that even with small number of partners, you can increase your chance to be infected.
People enjoy themselves inside a tavern in Vulindlela, some of the young women in the company of their older boyfriends. South Africa's treating 4 million HIV-positive individuals with pills to keep them alive. But, as Mahlase says, as long as poverty is pushing people to take risks, the country will fail to significantly decrease new infections. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Durban. We come back.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports and a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, and our Sunday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now on to Nightline Africa Sports, where we begin with the Africa Cup of Nations, where Egypt, Tunisia, Senegal, Madagascar have qualified for the finals. Madagascar qualified for the Africa Cup of Nations finals for the first time by beating Equatorial Guinea 1-0 in Ntwarana. They became the first team to qualify for a place in the finals that have now been expanded from 16 teams to 24. They were later joined by Egypt, Senegal, and Tunisia in qualifying for the finals in Cameroon next June-July. Madagascar's win moved them to 10 points in Group A with two matches left to play. Madagascar became the 40th different nation to qualify for the Nations Cup finals. Senegal's left it late to get the win they needed in Sudan to clinch a place in the finals alongside Madagascar from the group. Egypt and Tunisia helped each other to qualify for next year's expanded finals as they both won in Group J. Egypt secured a 2-0 win over Eswatini, formerly Swaziland. The Faroes qualification was confirmed later on Tuesday as Tunisia maintained their 100% winning record with a 2-1 victory over Niger in Niamey. There were two drawn matches in Group B as Comoros grabbed a 2-2 draw against visiting Morocco and Malawi held Cameroon to a goalless draw in Blantyre. The results mean that Cameroon topped the group with 8 points, but they qualify automatically as hosts, leaving just one more place up for grabs from the group. Morocco lead the way in the race into the finals on 7 points. Malawi move to 4 points and Comoros are on 2, with all the teams having played 4 matches. And 3 teams remain in contention to qualify for Group C after Gabon beat host South Sudan 1-0 and Burundi held visiting Mali to a 1-0 draw. Algeria missed out on the chance of qualifying from Group B as they lost 1-0 in Benin. Togo managed to take advantage of Algeria's slip with a late 1-0 win in the Gambia. And Nigerian striker Edion Ighalo's 5 goals in 2 games against Libya have lifted him to the top scorer in the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Nigeria moved to the top of Group E with a narrow 3-2 win over host Libya. South Africa labored to a goalless draw in Seychelles just 3 days after they had thrashed the same side 6-0 in Johannesburg. Seychelles can no longer qualify for the finals. Zimbabwe missed out on the chance of sealing qualification for Group G after they were held to a 1-1 draw in Harare by DR Congo. A win would have seen Zimbabwe through to the finals because later in the day, Congo-Brazzaville lost 2-1 in Liberia. Guinea and Ivory Coast remained the favorites to qualify from Group H despite both being held to away draws. Ivory Coast were held to a goalless draw in Bangui by Central African Republic, while in Kigali it was a 1-1 draw between Rwanda and Guinea. Mauritania are another team who could qualify for their first Cup Nation finals after a 1-0 win over Angola in Group I. Botswana are out of contention despite holding on for a goalless draw against visiting Burkina Faso. Namibia's 1-0 win over Mozambique moved them level at the top of Group K alongside Guinea-Bissau, who beat Zambia 2-1 on Sunday. And Farouk Mia's 2 goals for Uganda in Lesotho has put the Cranes on course for a second consecutive Nations Cup. Uganda took a big step towards qualifying for a second successive Nations Cup as neighbors Tanzania kept their hopes alive in Group L. Tanzania recovered from a missed penalty to record a 2-0 win over Cape Verde in Dar es Salaam. There are 2 more qualifying grounds left to play, one in November, and the final matches will be in March next year. Meanwhile, Football Kenya Federation has announced the Harambee Starlets have replaced Equatorial Guinea at the 2018 Women's Africa Cup of Nations. The 8-team tournament is set to kick off in Ghana on November 17th. 2-time winners Equatorial Guinea beat Kenya 3-2 on aggregate in the final round of qualifying before the Kenyans protested over the eligibility of 6 players. CAF upheld Kenya's protest over 1 player, Annette Jackie Masomo,
The player in question was allegedly of Cameroonian nationality and had played for several European-based clubs. It will be Kenya's second appearance in the competition, following their debut at the 2016 tournament in Cameroon. Finally in boxing, Saul Canelo Alvarez has signed the richest contract in the history of sports with a record-breaking 11-fight deal with streaming service DAZN. The WBC, WBA, Linear and Ring Magazine middleweight champion finalized terms on a five-year agreement worth a minimum of $365 million on Wednesday. The deal begins the December 15th clash with Britain's Roque Fielding at Madison Square Garden in New York. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Alpha Sports. Yes, it's Sunday on Nathan Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from the continent.
Kitomi ni kande, kwa moto baridi zikande, kama ruba ni gande, tuwe wote. Come baby, come baby, sumari kwa nyundo ni donge, oh Monday to Sunday, I love you.
Iyo kote, so kwa bedi kwa kochi kitanda naichumia. Iyo kote, kiona kwa juu chini naizamia. Iyo kote.
Sungura nipe karoti marage sijazoea.
Iyo kote.
Na kunja kote na pandisha mori na chichimea. Oh yeah. Baby, baby.
Ukitoka kuoga nitenge ya moto moto. Tinga moka kitenge tutoke mtoko. Ah, boda kwa boda tuteme chocho kwa chocho. Tena nikichoka ni bebe mi kwako mtoto yeye. Rafuzi ya Pemba rangi rangi pale. Nyule kihindi chambi chambi na cheza rafu kona bambi. Kitanda naichumia. Iyo kote. Kiona kwa juu chini naizamia. Iyo kote.
Sungura nipe karoti marage sijazoea.
Iyo kote.
Na kunja kote na pandisha mori na chichimea.
The mix killer.
True love, no be by energy. And see, I get the formula.
So penetrate your heart, let me break it down. It's you that I want. The kind of ring when I won't give you. This time around, not that kind of ring though. When I go put on your finger, right on the altar, baby, make me there. Oh, one plus one is one. Now it be the arithmetic when go keep us together. Can't nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, one plus one is one. Now it be the melody I go to play you forever. Can't nobody treat you like I do, my baby. Oh, baby. Take you out tonight for a dinner, doing things right like a replay. Is that I will be? See my baby, wanna give me. Even when the things they waste, but don't bother you. Now then I go, they love you better. Treat you well, no matter the weather, you go bump my tata. It's the dream of every man to get a fine girl like you. It go be like priceless you. Baby, me, you go make with the love.
Africa, Jamaica, that's how we say. Africa, Jamaica, that's how we say. Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say. Yeah. Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say. Come here, lift up, man, rock out, rock out.
The cradle of life and the building of civilization. Mama Africa, you are the foundation. Up to the time we realize that the energy and vibration, it can't compare. Every African put on no hand in the ear. Do the Wakanda dance like you just don't care. Represent for the motherland without a look of fear. Arrows and steer.
Tick-tock, I rhyme to how the beat drop. Watch the way that we groove to music non-stop. Spinning like the Rory, cause we got style. From Jamaica, Tanzania, Ghana.
Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say.
Yeah.
Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say.
Yeah.
Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say. Come here to lift up, and rock out, rock out. Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say.
Yeah.
Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say.
Yeah.
Africa, Jamaica, and that's how we say. Come here to lift up, and rock out.
Tell your mama and your papa, tell your sister and your brother. Baby girl, why you making me lose it? I don't wanna lose it. Not ready for losing.
Oh, na 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 na, don't blow my mind. Oh, na na. Oh, na 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 na. La 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 la.
Baby, I don't want nobody else but you. But nobody can make me feel no way.
Production.
mbide bugenda kulengero simbude one more time ngiro bude wanusiba mpubade kubera nkugamba hali suko jecho kakunzira moswa kide the things you do keep hurting me but I'll never leave cause I'm stuck on you era tiwa chonze nkuma kubabi onkolede onsima jakara nkobulira mazima mubyo nabye tunayita munze nja kugoma bwendozo kufulo mulala mumutwembe
And that was our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As the debate over land issues in South Africa and Namibia intensifies, white farming associations are pushing back vigorously. In particular, they are opposed to the concept of amending constitution to facilitate appropriation of land without compensation. But there have also been some farcical arguments that are being made by some white groups. For example, one has mentioned that since Africans are arguing that whites have no right to own land in South Africa or to be present in South Africa, then Africans in the entire African continent must accept that Europe belongs to whites only, and that Africans have no right there. This is a real silly argument, because no African is demanding a right to own land in Europe. Those Africans who are risking everything to get to Europe are either going there as refugees running away from persecution or economic migrants looking for jobs. In contrast, in Southern Africa, even one takes into account the views of the Pan-African Congress, a rival group, anti-African group in South Africa, no African has demanded that whites should leave Africa because they have no right. They may not like it, but they accept it as historical fact that whites in Southern Africa belong there. What they have argued throughout the centuries is that those whites who are there in southern Africa, south of the Limpopo River, have no right to discriminate against the Africans who were living there before they arrived. Secondly, they have argued that minority rule is unacceptable, and they fought for majority rule, or to win their independence, as in Namibia. With respect to the land issue, Africans have argued that the Africans were deprived of their ancestral land by force and without compensation, and they were pushed and confined in townships, and their movements were restricted in their own land. So this became a battle cry that they need land. But even when they achieved liberation or majority rule, Africans did not take the radical approach immediately. They did not ask for the transfer of land immediately. Instead, they took a soft approach. In both Zimbabwe and also in Namibia and South Africa, they came out with a policy of willing seller to willing buyer. But what they have discovered over the decades, that this policy has produced nothing, and therefore they have become frustrated, and they are now looking for drastic measures to right an historical wrong. The other argument which is made by white farmer groups is that when you transfer land from the whites to the blacks, then you have economic disaster. And they point out to Zimbabwe, where the radical measures were taken and then the economic collapse began. But there has been no scientific study as to what accounts for the collapse of the Zimbabwe economy. Was it just the transfer of lands from the white to the black? Or is it due to the economic sanctions and boycotts which were launched against Zimbabwe because of that policy? I would say the jury is still out. It is also true that in certain situations where you transfer land from the white to the black, the blacks have great difficulty obtaining loans from the banking system in their country. Where the whites can get it easily, the blacks would find it very difficult. And failure to raise capital may account for the deterioration in the economy, even when you remove the issue of sanctions. What is required now is not to cast aspersions or to peddle false statements, but for the white farmers to sit down with the government and to work out an amicable solution to a troubling problem. This will also be true for the case in Namibia. It is not right that the world community is being fed with falsehoods, distractions, and misstatements. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Netland Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. I'm Douglas Impuga, wishing you a wonderful evening.